from University of Waterloo. He obtained his PhD from Indiana University and then moved to Santa Barbara to start his first postdoc. After that, he spent 3 years in Harvard as a postdoctoral fellow, and just a few years ago joined University of Waterloo as an assistant professor. In 2005, he was awarded a Caltech Postdoctoral Prize Fellowship in Theoretical Physics. He is also an affiliate member of Perimeter Institute. And today, he will tell us about his recent work, which is topological semi-metals.
Thank you, Lukas, for the introduction. And I'd also like to thank Bhaskaran for inviting me to give this talk. Okay, so the title is topological semi-metals. So you've already heard a lot of talks on topological insulators. So this will be something new, but although not unrelated. Okay. So this is the list of my collaborators, Leon Valence at KACP, and so then the local people, Michael Hook, who is my student at Waterloo, and then Sasha Zuzin and Si Wu, they're both postdocs also at Waterloo. So this is the outline of the talk. So I'll start with an introduction, general introduction on both semi-metals in general and on topological semi-metals. So then I will move on to our specific realization of a topological semi-metal, which is a vial semi-metal in a topological insulator multilayer. What distinguishes this from other topological semi-metals is that this is, in some sense, on one hand, this is probably the simplest realization of topological semi-metal. On the other hand, it has perhaps the most interesting physical properties, as you will see. Okay. So then I will move on to these interesting physical properties. So the most interesting among them is this quantized or semi-quantized anomalous Hall effect and chiral edge states that characterize this wild semi-metal, okay? So then I will, if I have time, I will talk about bulk transport in wild semi-metals, which is also very interesting. And then, if I have time, which is very unlikely, I will talk about another type of topological semi-metal, which has line nodes instead of point nodes in the band structure. Okay, so let's start with semi-metals. So, you know, if you open your favorite solid-state textbook, the typical definition of a semi-metal is a material where conduction and valence bands overlap slightly, right? So you have maybe an electron pocket and a hole pocket. In this talk, I will be more strict in my definition of what I mean by a semi-metal, okay? So I will define a semi-metal as a material where conduction and valence bands just touch, at isolated special points in the Brillouin zone. Okay, so no overlap, no gap, just touching of the bands at points. So if you define a semi-metal in this way, so this is neither a metal, right? It doesn't have a Fermi surface, nor is it an insulator. There is no gap. And so in this sense, it can be thought of as truly a separate phase, right? So we usually divide solids into metals and insulators. Semi-metal, defined in this way, is a truly intermediate phase between metals and insulators, okay? So this topic of semi-metals has been studied basically since the very beginnings of the quantum theory of solids. So the first work, pioneering work, was probably by Hering in 1937. So he just considered the general conditions under which bands in crystals can touch. Okay. Since then, there have been a lot of works by different people. I will just mention probably the most noticeable work by most noticeable people. So in 1968, Halperin and Rice considered this particular type of band touching, where the dispersion of the bands away from the touching point is quadratic, okay? And so what they concluded is that this type of semi-metal is actually unstable to an exciton instability, right? Where holes in the valence band bind with electrons in the conduction band, okay? And so this state actually becomes an insulator called excitonic insulator. So the in theory, this is very straightforward. Experimentally, unfortunately, this has never been observed, okay? So the only example, the only known example of an excitonic insulator is in quantum Hall bilayers at feeding factor 1, right? So this requires strong magnetic field, but in a regular crystal with this kind of band touching, it has never been observed.
So is this insulator for all dimensions?
Sorry?
Is this true for all dimensions?
The instability, certainly true for 3. I would think it's true for 2 as well, yeah. So then later, just a few years later, Abrikosov considered this type of band touching, which is more generic, right? So to get quadratic band touching, you need to somehow prohibit terms which are linear in momentum that would couple the two bands that require some special conditions, some special symmetries. So the most generic band touching will be linear, right? And so he considered this type of band touching and showed that this type of band touching is actually stable to interactions, even to long-range Coulomb interactions. Okay. So this type of semi-metal with linear band touching is indeed a stable phase of matter. Okay. And so very recently, it has been realized that so these kind of semi-metals with linear band touching, in fact, can be topologically non-trivial. Okay. So we are already used to topologically non-trivial insulators, right? So these are insulators in the bulk which have metallic surface states due to their non-trivial topology of the bulk wave function.
Question.
Yeah.
Did Abrikosov have graphene in mind, or it was
general? No, it was general. So it was called on the existence of substances intermediate between metals and insulators. He didn't have any specific material in mind. So,
excuse me.
Yeah.
Before going into the topological case, is there any feature of these materials that we should keep in mind? So they are not metals.
Well, I will talk about the physical properties later. They are not metals.
By definition, but okay, you'll talk later.
Yeah, I will talk about the physical properties later. So, these surface states of topological insulators are protected, right? So they are protected by two things. First of all, the bulk gap, right? If you perturb the system, but the perturbation is not strong enough to close the bulk gap, the surface states will still exist, provided usually in time reversal invariant topological insulators, you also need to preserve time reversal symmetry. Okay, so the combination of bulk gap plus time reversal symmetry protects these surface states. So one of the main messages of my talk is going to be that some gapless semi-metals with this kind of linear dispersion away from the band touching points also have protected metallic edge states. But the nature of the protection is obviously different from topological insulators because there is no gap. There is no spectral gap. Okay? So you will see how it works. Okay, so it's a very important role in this whole story is played by the dimensionality of space. Okay, so it turns out that unlike topological insulators, which can exist in two dimensions or three dimensions, this particular type of topological semi-metals I'll talk about can only exist in three dimensions. They're intrinsically three-dimensional materials. And so this can be seen by considering this famous and old problem in quantum mechanics, first considered by von Neumann and Wigner. So the problem of two-level crossings. Okay? So what these people showed is that if you have two levels, right, if you have two-level system, and you want to make these two levels cross each other, right? You need to generally tune three parameters, right? And this is very easy to understand. So a Hamiltonian, any Hamiltonian in the Hilbert space of these two levels is going to have this general form, right? It's going to be a combination of linear combination of Pauli matrices with real coefficients, right? And I'm neglecting the unit matrix because it just shifts the energy up and down. Okay. So obviously, to make the two levels coincide, you need to make all these three coefficients equal to zero, right? So these are these three parameters that you have to tune. Now, so in a crystal band structure, if we are at a fixed momentum, right, we can view this crystal band structure as also just a bunch of levels, right? And so then, if you want to make two bands cross, right, the parameters that are available for you to tune the separation between the levels are the components of the crystal momentum, right? And so you need three components to make two bands cross generically without special conditions. Hence, this fact that topological semimetals generically occur only in three dimensions. Okay, so you can ask about what about graphene, right, which is two-dimensional semimetal. So in graphene, you do actually need special constraints, right? So you need to use the fact that the graphene honeycomb lattice has inversion symmetry, right? Plus time reversal symmetry. So combination of these two protects the band touching points. If you remove any of these, you will open a gap. Okay. Okay. So now let me assume that I have. So the conclusion from here is that in three dimensions, in three-dimensional band structures, we will generically have band touching points, okay, without any special conditions. They will occur accidentally. Okay. So suppose I have such a band touching point, okay, between two bands. So just by analogy with this Hamiltonian, I will just replace these coefficients by components of the crystal momentum, right? And then I will get the Hamiltonian, the momentum space Hamiltonian near such a band touching point, right? And so you immediately see that it has this form of a Weyl Hamiltonian, which is known in particle physics, right? So this Weyl fermions come in two flavors, right, which corresponds to this plus or minus sign here. So this simply corresponds to chirality of these fermions. Okay, and so in large part due to very recent work of Volovic, it has been realized that these objects are actually topological. Okay. And that, well, it's easy to see that they're topological in the following sense. So so let's pick a particular sign of chirality, let's say minus, right? And then think about the direction of spin that you need to minimize the energy, right? So obviously for negative chirality, spin will be along the momentum, right? For positive chirality, spin will be opposite to the momentum. So then, the spin structure, right, around this band touching point has the form of a topological defect in momentum space, which looks like a hedgehog, right? Hedgehog is two different chiralities. So a very important consequence of that, of this topological character of Weyl nodes in three dimensions, is that if you take an isolated Weyl node in a band structure, it's an absolutely indestructible object. Okay, so this is easy to see because, you know, any perturbation, any imaginable perturbation that you can add to this Hamiltonian, it's also going to be some 2x2 matrix, right? With some 2x2 with some coefficients, right? And so the only thing it can do is simply shift this node either in momentum space or in energy, if you add the unit matrix, right? So an isolated Weyl node is absolutely indestructible, right? So this is better than a gap. A gap you can close by a strong enough perturbation. This thing you cannot get rid of by anything, okay? So the only way, in fact, to get rid of a Weyl node is to annihilate it with an antinode, with a Weyl node of this opposite chirality, okay? And so there is, in fact, a theorem by Nielsen in Ninomia. So Nielsen is very smart guy. He's one of the founding fathers of string theory, along with Süskind. And so this theorem says that in lattice fermion models, Weyl fermions always appear in pairs of opposite chirality. So there is always, in principle, for any Weyl fermion, there is another one with opposite chirality, and so they can, in principle, annihilate. Okay? So then the protection from annihilation is provided by separating such pairs in momentum space, okay, as far away as possible. Okay? So this is the mechanism of protection in this case. Okay, so now the question is, how do you find such Weyl nodes, right? So as I said, they will occur generically in three-dimensional band structures. But it doesn't mean that it's easy to find them, right? So one way is to just find them accidentally. And so this is what happened in the first work, in the first finding of Weyl fermions in condensed matter. So this is a work by Ashwin Vishwanath's group. So they did basically band structure calculations on this material, yttrium iridium oxide. They were looking for something completely different. They were motivated by a proposal that this type of material is a topological Mott insulator. Okay? So instead, what they found is that in a certain range, for a certain range of on-site repulsion U, this became a Weyl semimetal. It's a very complicated Weyl semimetal. It has 24 Weyl nodes, so 12 pairs of nodes with opposite chirality. It does not have any of this interesting stuff like anomalous quantum Hall effect, because it basically cancels by symmetry. Okay? But this was the first observation of Weyl fermions in condensed matter, you can say.
So spin orbit coupling is essential for this.
Yeah.
So is there a situation where you can replace sigma by a pseudo spin, like in graphene?
Sure. I mean, the sigma does not have to be spin. You know, sigma is just a degree. It's just this 2 by 2. It's just this, you know, two component degree of freedom that.
But in this particular case, it is spin. In this iridium.
I'm not sure actually. It may not be. So even in the case I will talk about, it's not simple spin. It's a combination of spin and something else. So you know, so basically what you need is a contact between two non-degenerate bands, right? So that's why you need spin orbit, right? Okay, so the question we wanted to ask is the following. So is there a systematic way to find Weyl fermions? Okay, so it's okay to find them accidentally, but is there a systematic way? So the answer is yes, and this is based on the following observation, that Weyl fermions will occur generically, always, at a critical point between an ordinary and a topological insulator in three dimensions. Okay? So let me explain this on this slide briefly for those of you who know something about topological insulators, and on the next slide I will elaborate on this, okay, for those of you who don't know. So basically, you know, if you want to sort of summarize the physics of 3D topological insulators in one sentence, this will be this. So physics of 3D topological insulators is the sign change of the mass of a four-component Dirac fermion. Okay, that's it. The four components here are two bands of opposite parity plus two spin components. Okay. Mass is the band gap between two bands of opposite parity. Band inversion is a sign of change of the mass. Okay? And so where do you get Weyl fermions? Well, so this is simple. So any four-component Dirac fermion, as you know, can be decomposed into two-component Weyl fermions of opposite chirality. Okay? Okay, so let me explain this in slightly more detail now. So basically, the physics of 3D topological insulators is spin-orbit interaction-driven inversion between two bands of opposite parity, right? So a minimal model of a 3D topological insulator always employs four states, right? So these are this plus, minus, and up, down. So plus and minus refer to opposite parities, right? And up and down are the two spin directions, right? And so then the most general K dot P Hamiltonian you can write down near some high symmetry direction in the Brillouin zone, like let's say the gamma point, will be this, right? So the delta here is the gap between plus and minus bands, right? The terms proportional to K plus and K minus are the terms that couple, let's say, plus up and minus down states, right? So this type of term is needed to preserve parity and spin, and conserve spin, right? Conserve parity and spin.
So K plus is KX plus AK, right?
Yeah. So it has angular momentum one, yeah. On the other hand, the bands with opposite parity but the same spin are coupled by KZ, right? So this is again needed to preserve spin and to conserve angular momentum and parity, okay? So this is the Hamiltonian this is the Hamiltonian of a four-component Dirac fermion, okay? If you don't believe it, just diagonalize it and you get dispersion of a massive Dirac fermion, okay? Where the mass is the band gap here, okay? Now, the situation I'm considering so far is when both time reversal and inversion symmetries are present, okay? So in this case, these bands are pairwise degenerate, right, with respect to spin. So plus up and plus down are degenerate at every momentum, and minus up, minus down are degenerate at every momentum. So then the following thing happens. So you have an insulator when, let's say, delta is greater than zero, right? So then you tune delta to zero, right? When delta is equal to zero, you have this four-component Dirac fermion, right? Then when delta is less than zero, you have, again, an insulator, but with bands inverted. So this, let's say, if this is an ordinary insulator, this will be a topological insulator. And you have a massless Dirac fermion right at the critical point between the two, okay? Okay, now where are the Weyl fermions? So as you know, any 4x4 Dirac fermion can always be decomposed into a pair of opposite chirality Weyl fermions. So what it means technically is that by a basis rotation, I can always rewrite this Hamiltonian in the following way. So I have one 2x2 Weyl fermion, another 2x2 Weyl fermion, so they have opposite chiralities. And then the band gap serves to mix the two, okay? When they're mixed, you have an insulator, and therefore there is a gap. When they're not mixed, which happens exactly at the transition, you have a massless four-component Dirac fermion, or you can think of this as two Weyl fermions residing at the same point in momentum space, okay? Okay, so, So you see that these Weyl fermions, in the presence of both time reversal and inversion symmetry, exist only at one point in the phase diagram, only when delta is equal to zero. Okay. So if you want to create a stable phase with Weyl fermions, what we have to do is we have to break either time reversal or inversion symmetry. Okay. What this does is it separates these two different Weyl fermions in momentum space. Okay, so in the rest of my talk, I will focus on this case of breaking time reversal symmetry because this produces the simplest possible phase. Okay.
Questions?
Yeah.
So the standard Dirac fermion for electron can also be written like this.
Sure. Yeah.
But people don't do it normally.
Yeah. Yeah, so a massive Dirac fermion can always be written in this way. Yeah. Okay, so let me still work with this simple Hamiltonian, not relating to any particular material, right? And so let me imagine that I break time reversal, right? I can break time reversal by simply adding the following term, m sigma z, to both 2x2 blocks corresponding to the two Weyl fermions. Okay? So then you can easily calculate the dispersion, and then what you observe is the following, that there is actually a phase transition as a function of ratio of m over delta. Okay? So when m, this parameter corresponding to breaking of time reversal symmetry, is less than delta, you have your regular massive Dirac fermion. Right? On the other hand, when m is greater than delta, this massive Dirac fermion splits into two Weyl fermions, into two massless Weyl fermions. Okay? And so these Weyl nodes will stay unhybridized as long as m is greater than delta. Okay? So the delta does not have to be non-zero in order for them to be not hybridized. That's the point. So you get a stable phase of matter, right? Which exists not just at one point, but in a range of parameters in the phase diagram. Okay. So you can think of this type of state as maybe the best way to think about this as a 3D analog of graphene, right? Only better. So what's better? Well, first of all, as I said, this is stable. This does not require any special conditions, right? This will occur generically if you break time reversal symmetry. Graphene requires the inversion symmetry of the honeycomb lattice and presence of time reversal symmetry. And as I will show you, it also has very interesting physical properties. I believe more interesting than those of graphene in some sense. Okay, so now the next question is, so this is all sort of abstract theory. The question is, how do we realize this? Okay, so basically what we need, so we need a three-dimensional material, right, which is close to a critical point between topological insulator and normal insulator, right? Because you remember that massless Weyl fermions occur right at the critical point, right? So we need time reversal symmetry breaking of sufficient strength, okay, to separate these two Weyl nodes. So as a note here, I will point out that so in two dimensions, actually, the first point has been achieved already experimentally by Mollenkamp, right? So they have this heterostructure, cadmium telluride, mercury telluride heterostructure, and they can tune the width of the mercury telluride quantum well to drive the system across the transition from a two-dimensional topological to ordinary insulator. Okay. And in fact, there was a recent paper by Mollenkamp where they tune it exactly to the critical point and get massless two-dimensional Dirac fermions. And so Mollenkamp calls this better graphene because they have, for example, they see a better quality quantum Hall effect in this system. Okay. So I guess I may call our proposal an even better graphene. Okay, so now let me move on to the actual proposal. So it's not unlike this Mollenkamp's system, right? So we have, what we propose is the following multi-layer heterostructure, right? So it's a heterostructure consisting of alternating layers of topological insulator, Ti, and normal insulator, Ni, right? So the layers should be thin enough so that electrons can tunnel across these layers, right? So this has been demonstrated experimentally in many experiments by now, so they can grow such thin layers by molecular beam epitaxy, and so, for example, hybridization gap has been demonstrated clearly, okay? So this is definitely possible, and if it's possible to grow a single film, I would imagine it's possible to grow a multi-layer. Okay, how do you achieve the transition between topological insulator and normal insulator? So that you achieve, in a close similarity to Mollenkamp's system, by tuning the relative width of the topological insulator and normal insulator layers. Okay, so if you are in this situation on the left, right, where topological insulator layers are much thicker than the normal insulator layers, right? So then you can think of this in the following way. So you have basically topological, a lot of topological insulator materials. There are little obstructions here made of normal insulator, but the system will heal itself by just tunneling across these normal insulator inclusions, okay? So this whole material is a 3D, bulk 3D topological insulator, okay? On the other hand, in the opposite situation, when you have thin, very thin topological insulator layers, but thick normal insulator layers, this is basically a normal insulator because the edge states of these topological insulators will hybridize, right? And then the whole thing will be just an insulator. Okay? You can also think about this system in the following way, in a way that's sort of makes it analogous to these Chalker-Coddington models for the integer quantum Hall effect, right? So you can think in terms of edge states, only edge states on the top and bottom surface on each of each layer, right? And then, so in this case, so these edge states are paired strongly, right? But then at the top and bottom surface, there will always be an unpaired edge state. And so these are the these unpaired edge states are the edge states of the 3D topological insulator. Okay. On the other hand, in this case, all the edge states are paired and hybridized and disappear. Okay. And so in between, basically when the thicknesses are of the same order, there will be a transition between a topological insulator and an ordinary insulator. Okay. And so we want to be basically in the vicinity of this transition. Now, what about breaking time reversal? Okay, so given that heterostructure, we still have to break time reversal. Okay, in principle, this can be accomplished by just applying magnetic field along the growth direction of this heterostructure. But this is not perfect because so as I mentioned, we want to observe this quantum anomalous Hall effect, a Hall effect which exists without any magnetic field. So from this point of view, it's better to break time reversal by, for example, like this, by doping these magnetic impurities, okay, and hoping that at sufficient concentration, these magnetic impurities will order ferromagnetically. Okay, so this is actually the most subtle point of the whole proposal. And the subtlety here is the following. So normally, when you think about doping a material with magnetic impurities and achieving a ferromagnetic state, right? Typically, the material is assumed to be a metal, right? Because then these magnetic impurities can interact with each other through RKKY interaction, and that requires a Fermi surface. Here, you are doping a bulk insulator. So how will they interact, right? So basically, so this actually has been observed experimentally. And what these people, the way these people explain the why ferromagnetism appears in the system is by basically saying that so these bismuth-based topological insulator materials have extremely strong what's called Van Vleck susceptibility. So this is basically susceptibility, magnetic susceptibility due to interband transitions, due to interband matrix elements of the spin, okay? So typically these are very small, but bismuth telluride somehow has very strong such matrix elements, and this, as they claim, is enough to give you ferromagnetism, okay? So this paper has serious people like Shucheng Zhang, so you tend to believe them, okay? but certainly this is still an open question, why this becomes ferromagnetic.
So, are you assuming there is a inversion symmetry?
Yes.
And
yeah.
It is necessary.
It is necessary. Yeah, it's necessary. So, inversion symmetry, you know. So, I will get two while nodes, right? So, inversion symmetry is necessary to guarantee that they occur at the same energy. if I break inversion.
You have pump surface?
Yeah. So inversion symmetry is preserved here. This is a slide just about the theory of this. So the theory of this system can be constructed very simply, right? So just in terms of edge states of these topological insulator films, right? So this is the Hamiltonian. So the first term describes the top and bottom surface states, right? I'm assuming there is a single Dirac cone. So top and bottom surface states in each topological insulator layer. So tau here is a pseudo spin that describes this top and bottom degree of freedom. Sigma is a real spin. The second term, M sigma z, so this is this is the spin splitting due to ferromagnetically ordered magnetic impurities, right? And then the rest of the terms are tunneling, right? So delta S is the tunneling between top and bottom surface in the same layer, right? And delta D is the tunneling between top and bottom surface in neighboring layers. So then in this model, the transition happens when delta S is equal to delta D, right? So when delta S is greater than delta D, this is ordinary insulator. When delta D is greater than delta S, this is a topological insulator.
So does this impurity generically affect inversion?
Well, I am assuming that they don't.
Arranged
in a symmetric way? They are arranged randomly, right?
So presumably
random random arrangement will not, as long as it doesn't break inversion symmetry on average, that's okay. But they will be arranged randomly. So given this Hamiltonian, it's very easy to calculate the band structure. So it turns out that you can, after Fourier transforming to momentum space, you can write this Hamiltonian in terms of two blocks, plus and minus. So this looks like, actually, both of these Hamiltonians look like Hamiltonians of two-dimensional Dirac fermions. We say parameter-dependent mass term, this mass term that depends on the Kz, on the momentum along the growth direction, okay?
So typically that would be a very small Fermi velocity.
The bandwidth in this direction is going to be small. So it's very anisotropic in this sense, So you get vial nodes when this mass, this is a minus sign, vanishes, right? When M is equal to delta of Kz, right? Then you can solve this equation and you get two vial nodes. They can occur either near zero if delta S and delta D have different signs, or near pi over D if they have same signs. So I will assume they will have same signs. So the nodes occur near the edge of the brilliant zone and are separated by this wave vector, which depends monotonically on the strength of this breaking of time reversal symmetry. Okay. And so the node, these two vial nodes exist as long as M is in this interval, right? And this interval is basically the bandwidth. Okay, so as long as M is within the bandwidth as a function of Kz, the nodes exist. Okay. So here is the phase diagram, right? So the phase diagram without breaking of time reversal symmetry is very simple. I just have two phases, ordinary insulator when delta S is greater than delta D, and topological insulator when delta D is greater than delta S, right? And this line is a line of phase transitions between the two, right? So once I turn on M, so you can think of this in the following way, that this line of phase transitions between ordinary and topological insulator simply broadens into a vial semi-metal phase, okay? And of course, the topological insulator phase disappears in this case because you've broken time reversal symmetry, so there is no distinction between ordinary and topological insulators in this case. there is an extra phase here that appears. It's called quantum anomalous Hall phase. And so that occurs when you separate the nodes, the vial nodes, so far that they actually disappear at the opposite corners of the brilliant zone, at the opposite sides of the brilliant zone. So in this case, you get an insulator, but that's this non-trivial quantum anomalous Hall insulator. So I will talk about this later. Okay, so now, so this is the phase diagram. Now let me actually talk about the physical properties of this vial semi-metal phase. Okay. So probably the most interesting property that it has is this quantum anomalous Hall effect. Okay. So this is actually very easy to understand. So let me take, so remember that Hamiltonian consists of two by two blocks, right? Let me just focus on the block that has vial nodes in it, right? So this is H minus, right? So it has vial nodes when this mass disappears, goes to zero, right? So as I said, we can regard this Hamiltonian as a Hamiltonian of two-dimensional Dirac fermions with a parameter-dependent mass, with a mass that depends on kz as a parameter, okay? Now we know that in the case of 2D Dirac fermions, that change of sign of the mass is a quantum Hall transition. Okay, so the easiest way to see this is to apply a very small perpendicular magnetic field to this system. Right. So in this case, you know that Dirac fermions have this special Landau level, which is exactly at zero energy if the mass is zero, right? And then it's either slightly above or below the zero energy if the mass is not zero, right? And so here, what is plotted here is this lowest Landau level as a function of kz, right? And so basically what happens at the vial nodes is that this Landau level crosses the zero energy, right? So basically, For all momenta kz that lie in between the two vial nodes, you get one extra field Landau level, right? And therefore, so every momentum point in between the two vial nodes contributes a quantum of Hall conductance to the total Hall conductance of the system. Okay. So then the calculation of the total Hall conductivity is elementary, right? You just integrate between the two vial nodes, E squared over H, right? And so this is what you get. So it's the Hall conductivity of the vial semi-metal is equal to E squared over H times basically the momentum space separation of the vial nodes, okay? So in this sense, you know, it's almost quantized, right? So the sigma xy is almost given by a combination of fundamental constants apart from this k0, right? So if you can measure k0 by some other means, then this will give you a measurement of E squared over H, right? So how does this quantum anomalous Hall insulator appear? So if you see, as I said, if you keep separating vial nodes in momentum space, eventually the distance between them will become equal to the reciprocal lattice vector, right? So in this case, the vial nodes disappear, right? Because the two sides of the brilliant zone is the same point, but the Hall conductivity is not zero, right? The Hall conductivity is E squared over dH, which means where d is the super lattice period of this structure. So this means it's quantized to E squared over H per each layer, okay? So it's basically three-dimensional quantum anomalous Hall insulator.
So is it the same class as the spec of integer quantum Hall?
Sorry?
Is it same as the spec of integer quantum Hall?
Yeah, yeah. In this sense, this is trivial because this is just a stack of two-dimensional integer quantum Hall states. This is non-trivial, right? This cannot be thought of as a stack of 2D systems. Okay. Okay, so okay, so this is a plot, for example, of sigma xy versus this parameter m, which measures the strength of the time reversal breaking for a finite, for a multi-layer consisting of a finite number of layers. Okay, so because the number of layers is finite, you see these quantized steps. Okay, so this is presumably something that will be measured in experiment. Okay. So from this picture, right, it's also obvious that this system is characterized by chiral edge states, right? Because every one of these two-dimensional systems corresponding to Kz between the while nodes is just a regular integer quantum Hall system, and this has an edge. This has chiral edge states. So therefore, the while semimetal will have chiral edge states. So they will exist in the Brillouin zone of the surface in the subset of the Brillouin zone where the momentum Kz lies in the interval between the Weyl nodes. Okay. So basically, you know, so the bottom line is that this is the only known example of a three-dimensional state which has an almost quantized anomalous Hall conductivity and also has chiral edge states. Okay, and cannot be sort of adiabatically connected to just stacked two-dimensional quantum Hall systems. Okay, this is the sort of the novelty of this. How much time do I have? 15? Okay. Okay, so let me now switch gears a little bit and talk about other bulk transport properties of this state. Right? So, you know, an advantage you can say of Weyl semimetal compared to topological insulators is that in topological insulators, the only thing that distinguishes them from other states of matter is the existence of edge states, right? And observing these edge states is not easy, right? You can observe them in ARPES, right? But as observing transport, for example, through these edge states is hard due to presence of you know, parasitic conduction through the bulk and so on. So this Weyl semimetal state is gapless to begin with, right? So everything is new. Even bulk transport is also novel and interesting. Okay, and so basically the point is that the bulk response of this system is can be characterized as quantum critical. So due to the fact that a Weyl fermion, which has linear dispersion, has no intrinsic length scales, has no intrinsic energy scales. Right? If you have a linear dispersion going all the way to infinity, there is no energy scale, right? Of course, it will be cut off at some higher energy, right? But if you are interested in low energy phenomena, this will be true, okay? So there is an example of such a state again. So graphene, right? So graphene also in principle should exhibit quantum critical response. But in graphene, at least as far as transport is concerned, the problem is a disorder dominates everything, right? So if you look at, so this is the conductivity of graphene as a function of density of carriers if you deviate from the point, right? So this looks like maybe something going to zero, right, linearly. However, once you actually get to the neutrality point, you get a finite conductivity because of disorder. Because disorder basically creates a finite density of states at the Dirac point. Okay? So graphene doesn't really exhibit this kind of quantum critical response, at least in transport. So Weyl semimetal turns out to be very different from graphene. And the reason is that interactions, in this case, dominate over disorder. And so this gives you clear signatures of quantum critical behavior. Okay? So it's very easy to understand. So basically, let me first look at the scattering rate due to electron-electron interactions, right? So due to this lack of any intrinsic energy scale, the scattering rate has to be proportional to the energy of the quasi-particle, let's say if we are at zero temperature, or to temperature, if we are at high temperature, right? On the other hand, if you look at the impurity scattering rate in the Born approximation is always proportional to the density of states, right? And the density of states, so in graphene, the density of states is linear in energy. So then these two are of the same order, right? And compete. However, in this case, in the case of wild semi-metal, density of states is quadratic in energy. And so then the role of this order at low energies is always negligible compared to the role of electron-electron interactions. Okay? So then if you calculate DC conductivity, it shows this very interesting linear power law insulating behavior, where the conductivity goes to zero linearly with temperature. Okay? So actually, unlike graphene, which is a metal, right, it has a finite conductivity at even at neutrality point, while semi-metal is actually an insulator, okay, and it's due to electron-electron interactions. Now, you can also calculate an analog of this equation, so how conductivity behaves if you deviate from charge neutrality, right? And so in this case, I won't go into details. In this case, you get something that goes as n to the 1/3 instead of n, okay? And so what's nice about this is that you can summarize both results in terms of this universal scaling function, quantum critical scaling function, which is a function of only Fermi energy divided by T. Okay, so both limits, both the charge neutral limit, right, when the T is much greater than the Fermi energy, and the limit when Fermi energy is greater than T, can be captured by this single scaling function. Okay. Same presumably holds for optical conductivity, but we have not calculated that. Okay, so let me conclude at this point. So so basically, what I've hopefully shown you is that while semi-metal is a new topological state of matter, so it has no gap, yet it has topologically protected edge states. So the mechanism of topological protection is completely different from topological insulators, right? It's provided not by bulk spectral gap, but by separation of the opposite chirality vial nodes in momentum space. So it's characterized by this almost semi-quantized Hall conductivity and chiral edge states, and this is the only known three-dimensional material which has this kind of quantized Hall conductivity and chiral edge states. Diagonal transport is interesting. It shows features of shows quantum critical features. So this and I've shown you that this state of matter can be in principle realized in a magnetically doped Ti and I multilayer heterostructure. So again, this is analogous to graphene, but you know, hopefully better, in a sense, more interesting. Thank you.
Are there any questions?
Yeah.
So, if you the surface state in the Y interface, so the Fermi surface of the 2D Fermi surface state is 1D, I mean.
So the surface state, it's 2D like, right?
So is it closed Fermi surface?
You mean the edge?
Yeah, the surface mode of the 3D vial.
Right, so it's chiral.
Right.
Okay. It's chiral, and it exists. So it exists in a finite interval along kz, and the interval is given by the separation of the vial nodes. So it exists in the whole Brillouin zone in this direction, right? But only in a finite interval along the Gross direction.
It's like a Fermi arc.
Yeah. It's like a Fermi. It's what Ashwin called Fermi arc. Is that in Ashwin's case the difference is that in his case, these edge states are not chiral. because the chirality, so they have these 12 pairs of vial nodes, and only chirality is canceled. So his edge states are not chiral, and there is no whole connectivity. In our case, what's nice is that we have the minimal number of vial nodes, and so to get chiral edge states and then finite whole connectivity.
So in your case, everything is paired except on the one at the top and bottom, the way you have constructed.
Well, yeah, it's a bulk insulator, right? But it has top and bottom edge states.
You are basically pairing.
Pairing just in the sense of having finite tunneling.
Finite. So the top one will remain roughly untouched.
It's still hybridized with the bottom. No, it's still hybridized. It's just still separate, right? Because it's not, because it has just one neighbor instead of two.
And you wanted magnetic impurities.
Yeah.
That's basically to have strong exchange field. That's it.
So magnetic impurities provide the spin splitting. Right?
Splitting. So yeah. Ordinary magnetic field will be too difficult.
So in principle, for example, this effect, this kind of Hall connectivity can be observed even if you just apply a magnetic field, and if the Zeeman coupling is strong enough.
Normally,
it's pretty strong actually in these materials. So the G factor is not 2, but 50. So in principle, you can observe this physics
even
just with magnetic field.
Yes.
It's just not as striking because, you know, this magnetic field, of course, you expect some Hall connectivity. It's not going to be, you don't expect quantized Hall connectivity, you don't expect edge states, but you do expect some Hall effect. So in this sense, it's cleaner sort of when you realize this with magnetic impurities, but in principle, you can do it with magnetic field as well.
In real systems like yours, the Ashwin's, that compound,
mm-hmm.
How important are electron-electron interactions?
So, yeah, they are important because they get this state in this intermediate range of Coulomb U. Okay? So for small U, they just get a regular metal. For large U, they get a Mott insulator, right? And this is an intermediate phase.
And experimentally, is there any clue where the system is?
I don't think so.
They hope
that it's in here, but I don't know if there is.
What about your system,
mm-hmm.
bismuth telluride? Do you have a similar situation with respect to interaction?
Well, as far as I understand, in bismuth telluride interactions
are
rather weak.
Right. So. I see. So there is a chance that it will happen here rather than. More chance.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, here again, they've obtained this by accident, and another thing is that so this band structure calculation. So this is usual band structure calculation, which is LDA, right?
Plus U,
and this plus U usually, as far as I understand, makes things not very reliable, right? Especially as far as the band gaps are concerned. So how reliable these results are is not clear. Right? Because, for example, Leon and his student did a different calculation on a similar material and got completely different phase diagram. So they got this topological Mott insulator instead of this. While here, I mean, theoretically, it's very straightforward. I mean, the question is, can you grow this heterostructure?
Do we have more questions?